This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Your number is 877-217-5757, and you can send us an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Ray Strother is our guest to begin. He is the legendary political consultant, native of Port Arthur, Texas, but came to LSU, and he went to Washington in 1980 after being a political consultant for many years in Louisiana with Gus Weil, and he was, of course, the editor of the Reveille back in the day in the early 1960s. And man, born in 1940, he's joining us from his home in Bozeman, Montana. And Ray has represented most of the biggest lights in the Democratic Party in this generation, including the likes of Bill Clinton and Al Gore, many others, and, of course, many from Louisiana. But one of his clients was John Lewis. And in 2000, Ray Strother was assigned to produce a documentary for Congressman Lewis, who died last week in Atlanta at the age of 80 years old. An immense legacy from a pioneer of the civil rights movement who lasted from his teens until his 80s. And John Lewis left quite a mark on life in America and was a congressman until the day he died, with his office at 100 Peachtree Street in Atlanta, Georgia. Here is a snippet from the documentary that Ray Strother produced for Congressman Lewis in 2000.
18-year-old John Lewis boarded a Greyhound bus, a bus ride that helped change America.
I saw Martin Luther King Jr. standing behind a desk. I was so scared, so frightened. I didn't know what I was going to say to Martin Luther King Jr. This man had emerged as my hero, my leader, someone that I admired. But I was really scared to be in his presence. So he spoke up and said, "Are you the boy from Troy? Are you John Lewis?" Then I responded by saying, "Dr. King, I am John Robert Lewis." I gave my whole name. I didn't want there to be any mistake that I was the right person. And that was the beginning of our relationship and the beginning of my involvement in the civil rights movement.
Ray Strother, your thoughts about John Lewis, his life, and the loss for our country.
Well, I've represented a lot of politicians in my life, 320, 330, I don't know, you know, something in that order. He is my hero. He is a man that, if you watch Mr. Smith Goes to Washington by Frank Capra, he's Mr. Smith. He's what we always dreamed in civics classes that every congressman should be, somebody who stands for something, has complete, absolute integrity, and doesn't quit. Little guy, 5 feet 6 inches tall, but he was 8 feet tall in courage and his ability to bring people together.
Same height as Nick Saban, by the way, but both of those guys loom large and in different walks of life. And I'd have to say that the walk that John Lewis took was more substantial. After all, he was facing life or death circumstances. He almost died in 1965 when marchers crossed the Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, and he was hit in the head by a state trooper. His skull was fractured, and when he tried to get up, he was hit again. And that's symbolic because he was hit figuratively and literally, and he kept coming back and back and back.
Yeah, and I walked over that bridge, this Pettus Bridge, with him before I made this film. And it was a very moving thing because he was moved. It moved him every time he walked over it. And then when the official event came with Clinton, when he walked across the bridge with President Clinton, I was in a camera truck ahead of him, so I didn't technically walk with him at that particular point. But that's a moving experience, and I'll never forget it. Another moving experience I had was to drive with him. He and I drove from Montgomery to Birmingham. And it was the most unnerving thing that's ever happened to me, and that I still have, not nightmares, but thoughts about it. Here's a little short story. We had a driver, a young man who worked in Lewis's office. And no matter how fast we were going, Lewis would turn to him and say, "How fast are we going?" He said, I'm going the speed limit, Congressman. He said, "Well, go 5 miles under the speed limit." And he did this about every 10 minutes. And I said, "John, Congressman, what's going on here? He said, we got to be careful that the sheriff could come arrest us. I said, you're a United States congressman. He said, the sheriff could come arrest us. He said, do you see these fields out here? And I looked at just vast pine-covered fields like North Louisiana. He said, a lot of my friends were castrated out there.
Oh, my.
And he was terrified. Hmm. And this is a man who had been in Congress for years and was still terrified to drive through Alabama. So that shook me to my very core.
Well, it is curious that as substantial as he was, and he was in Congress for many years, more than 30, 34, I believe, beat Julian Bond in a tough race. At the end, you've got some of these ranking Republicans like Marco Rubio trying to salute him, and they're posting pictures of themselves with Elijah Cummings instead of John Lewis. It is bizarre.
It really was bizarre, and I'm not sure if it just didn't matter to them, just any blackface, or if they just made a terrible mistake, or a staff member made a terrible mistake. But it seems like, you know, you see each other a lot on Capitol Hill, so he shouldn't have, his picture shouldn't have been a mystery to any of them.
No, and the President of the United States, of course, took aim at Lewis, said he lived in a hellhole of a district. I tell you what, that's a pretty nice district. As I said, his office was at 100 Peachtree Street in the downtown area of Atlanta, and it wasn't just urban blight. He did a lot for the people of Atlanta, and as we know, he was a man from Alabama, and it all began for him as a teenager, and he kept going and going and going. But ultimately, we all meet our match, and his was pancreatic cancer. Not many people get out of stage 4 cancer. And a listener already has asked me to ask you, you know, you were involved in, I guess, what would be called civil unrest back in the day. Many may not know, but before he got to LSU, Ray went to Northwestern State on a track scholarship. The listener, it's Hal in Monroe. He says, were you kicked out of Northwestern?
Yeah, I was kicked out for demonstrating against the John Bird Society. The president at the time, a guy named Kaiser, thought that was pretty un-American for me to demonstrate against him. He thought I might be happier at some liberal university like LSU or the University of Texas. So I left the following Friday.
So that was what got you to LSU, and as they say,
the rest
is history. And another listener notes that on previous shows with yours truly, you've talked about Roy Barnes. You got him elected governor of Georgia, and then he was defeated in 2002. And the big issue, as you have stated, was he took down the Confederate flag. Imagine that. So things have changed.
He did.
Go ahead.
He took down the flag against my wishes because he was about to run for re-election. And he called me and told me he was going to do it. I said, Roy, why don't you wait another 2 months? Take it down in 2 months. He said, that wouldn't be honest. He said, it needs to come down right now. He said, I was in a classroom, and I saw that flag flying behind some little black kids. And he said, that's just not going to happen in Georgia. And he took down the flag, and that ended his political career. But he has the same kind of courage as Lewis, who was his dear friend.
In 2003, Barnes was awarded the Profile in Courage Award by the J.F. Kennedy Library for his success while governor, minimizing the Confederate battle emblem on the Georgia state flag despite the political consequences. Now, we've got a movement across this country to remove Confederate icons from the public square. Most believe it's a good thing, but others obviously do not. And the president has all but come out in favor of retaining these Confederate symbols. What do you think?
He's even come out in favor of the Confederate flag. You know, I'm a Southerner. I was born a Southerner. My parents were Southerners. We lost that war. And in effect, the people we are honoring with those names on bases were traitors. They fought against their own country. So I think the quicker we can get their names off of those, the better. There are a lot of American heroes. What about Patton? What about Eisenhower? What about, you know, I can name dozens of people. What about McCain? Name dozens of people whose names would be easily attached to those bases. I don't understand what Trump's trying to do. if he's trying to win the South, he's going to win the South anyway. There's no question about that. He better start worrying about suburban women in metropolitan areas.
Well, I'm not so sure he's going to win all of the South. Now, he won all 11 SEC states last time. I think he's in trouble in Florida right now. He could lose Georgia. He could lose the non-SEC state, but certainly a southern state of North Carolina. He probably will lose Virginia. And there's even talk, Ray Strother, that he could lose in Texas.
Well, you know, that's the kind of talk we hear 2 months before every election. And people tend to go home. Don't count on him losing Texas.
I don't think he's going to lose there. But Obama and Clinton both won in Georgia and Florida and North Carolina. So it's highly possible that Joseph Robinette Biden will also win there. We'll talk more with Ray Strother after this 90-second timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and we are with Ray Strother, the veteran political consultant. Several halls of fame have installed him for his immense work over the years. In today's New York Times, Trump's response on poll numbers, they've been wrong before. I'm not losing, Trump insisted in an interview on Sunday with Fox News' Chris Wallace after being presented with the cable network's latest poll, which showed Joe Biden with an 8-point advantage. The president, who often promotes poll numbers when they are favorable to him and even advertises what he claims is a 96% approval rating in the Republican Party without citing any source for the questionable stats, says the public polls that showed him losing were fake in 2016, and now they're even more fake. This in a story today in the New York Times from Annie Carney. Now, Ray Strother, the president, has even said, and he said it with Chris Wallace, that he might not leave voluntarily if he loses the election. He says that there's going to be massive fraud, mail voting will be fraudulent, and that he does not believe that he can lose this race if it's a fairly run contest. Your response?
He's about to affect a constitutional crisis. I believe that he will refuse to leave office. He will do anything he can. I've never lived in a time like this, none of us have, where a president of the United States is completely out of control. Completely out of control. Now about polls. The polls he calls were fake, showed Hillary Clinton winning by, 3 points or something like that. Well, she won by about 3 points or 2 points, something like
2.
That. So they weren't fake. 2.1. They were right. Those national polls are so misleading that I don't pay much attention to them at all. It's the electoral college states that really matter. And so don't pay attention to national polls. Pay attention to Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Florida. Pay attention to those, and then you'll know who's going to be president. And right now, if the election were held today, Trump would be stomped in those electoral states. He would come out a very poor second place in all of the important electoral states, except maybe Ohio.
103 days away, and his opponent is Joe Biden, who is older than the president by almost 4 years. But he has a 50-year record in American politics, and he has been exposed before, years ago, as a plagiarist. But most people know Joe Biden just like they knew Donald Trump or thought they knew him because they'd seen him for so many years on television, and they've probably already made up their minds about Joe Biden. So what can the president do to change the inertia at this stage?
Well, his problem is that Joe is probably the most decent human being in Washington, or he's not in Washington, he's in Delaware. But everybody on the Republican and Democratic side know of his decency. And he's just strictly a good man. And I've known him for many years. I did some work for him in the 80s. And he was one of the kindest, most decent human beings I've ever run into. Well, he spent a lifetime getting that reputation. And I don't think it could be taken away in 90 days by some swift boat attack. I think that it'll be hard to take that away from him.
A listener, and by the way, you can get in. We will take some calls, 877-217-5757, but this one is at talk@talklouisiana.org, asking about the the tragedies in Biden's life, and the major one was that his first wife died in an automobile accident, as did his young daughter. And that is rarely mentioned. It's one of those things where a politician probably doesn't want to mention that because it would seem unseemly. But nonetheless, it shows that he's had some hard knocks in his life that maybe the president has not faced.
He has. He's had some tough things to overcome, and he has. Remember, though, he absolutely understands the average voter. He rode that train every day, almost every day, from Baltimore, from Delaware, into Washington National. And in fact, my daughter used to ride the train with him when he came in, even when he was vice president, I think. So he's a man. He likes to cast himself as a man of the people, but he doesn't have to cast very wide. He is a man of the people. So I'm just a big Joe Biden fan.
Another listener notes that the president on these polls is sounding very similar to what he was 4 years ago when he said, this one's it's hilarious, it's so outrageous, Trump, and this is true, he said in 1962 he was the best baseball player in New York City. And I remember one of the cable channels showed photos of Mickey Mantle and Whitey Ford and Roger Maris and Donald Trump. Who was the best baseball player in 1962 in New York City? Was it Donald John Trump, Ray Strong?
I don't think so, and I'm a big baseball fan, but I seriously doubt he could hold his position anywhere on the field.
He won't even throw out the first pitch because he's afraid he can't hit home plate.
You know, Bush threw a beautiful pitch, if you remember, and very few people will be able to live up to that. I tried to throw a pitch in a college game, the opening game pitch, and I hit the dirt about 10 feet in front of the plate. it's not easy to do.
Well, you know who's throwing out the opening pitch for the Washington Nationals, the world champions? Trump was invited, and of course he again decided not to do it, but you know who's throwing it out? Anthony Fauci. who is 79 years old, and I bet you he makes it the home plate. 877-217-5757. Before we go to David in Atlanta, what about this weird attack on Fauci?
You know, what he did was he contradicted the president at every one of those news conferences or events, whatever they were called. And because the man can't help himself, he must tell the truth. And to be successful with Trump, you must be able to lie. And he's not good at it.
David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on with Ray Strother. Good morning, David. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. Well, my statement is, Rachel Maddow last night pointed out, since Trump has been president, he's been able to filter $7.4 million from Republican Party donations into his business accounts and also from the taxpayers, the Trump organization charging taxpayers, $7.4 million. And I've heard on conservative radio, Trump was praised for not accepting his salary. And much of this money could be illegal because it came from foreign sources, which is a violation of the Constitution, the Emoluments Clause.
All right. What about the president's financial dealings? Is he skirting the line?
Of course he is. I mean, the line is skirted every day when a foreign dignitary stays at his hotel next door, almost next door. He doesn't seem to care about that. This, I think, even a bigger story was asking the ambassador to get the British Open.
Yeah.
Yeah. British Open moved to his Scotland course. I mean, that kind of thing presidents shouldn't be doing. And there are laws against the president doing that. The founding fathers were worried about that, but this man violates every law, every moral code. I'm no longer surprised. It's just what he does.
Now, I suspect you travel to Washington occasionally, as do I, and I noticed the other day when I was going over some hotel options that the most expensive hotel in the city is the Trump International Hotel. And obviously a lot of people stay there because the president owns the joint. That in itself is, if it were anybody else, can you imagine if it were the Obama International Hotel? What would people be saying?
No, that's the whole point. And, of course, it's the most expensive hotel. It can be without any problem because a parade of dignitaries from foreign countries come through there. They all want to curry favor with Trump. We're the leading country in the world. So they stay at this hotel. I'm sure they mention that when they finally meet with it or when their ambassadors meet with our ambassadors or whatever. They say, oh, proudly, we stayed at the Trump Hotel. And I'm sure that as soon as he is not president, that allure will die.
877-217-5757. A bit more time with Ray Strother, the fabled political consultant, joining us from Montana. And then we'll hear from Mark Ballard of The Advocate, who's at the Archives Building, where qualifying is ongoing. And we'll get Mark's take on what's happening. We'll even get Ray's take on the addition of a prominent Democrat. The mayor of Shreveport has decided to run against William Morgan Cassidy, seeking a second term in the United States Senate. But is it too late? We'll talk. We'll be back after the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thanks for being with us. In just a bit, we should continue our Thursday tradition of talking with Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate, who's at the Archives Building, where qualifying is ongoing. Continues until 4:30 tomorrow. And there was a development yesterday of significance regarding the U.S. Senate race in Louisiana. We'll get Ray Strother's take on that, but this gentleman has been holding for quite some time. I want to get him in. And by the way, you can get in under the wire, 877-217-5757 for Ray Strother. Jerry in South Baton Rouge. Jerry, good morning to you. What's on your mind?
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Mr. Strother is still on, right?
Yes, he is.
I'm calling question, if I remember correctly, and forgive me if I'm get some of this wrong, but there seems to have been what I'll call a deathbed confession of someone who was involved in the demise of Gary Hart, a prominent Democratic presidential candidate. I think it was a story that was told to Mr. Strother, and I was wondering if what was his take on it, the veracity of the story.
That's the Lee Atwater story that was big news several months ago. Ray, you were on this show talking about it, but Atwater basically acknowledged near the time of his death that he had orchestrated this thing, didn't he?
Yeah, just before he died, he on his deathbed, as the caller said, he called a lot of people and apologized to me. He wasn't apologizing to me. He was admitting that he had rigged the Gary Hart fiasco. I had known it for, since he died, a long time. And had never said anything about it because I didn't see how it would add anything. And I didn't even tell Gary. But I was in Colorado a couple of years ago and eating lunch with Gary Hart. And I told him that story. And he found it vindicating for him. And first thing I know, he had told Warren Beatty and all of his closest friends. And it ended up on Rachel Maddow. But I was out of the country. I didn't see it. But Lee did that. It was about a 3 or 4 minute conversation, very brief. And I told the reporter for the Atlantic who called me about it, I said, I don't think this is news. It happened a long time ago. I'm a Gary Hart partisan. The source is dead. I don't see any news in this. But they did write something about it. So I think because there was a movie coming out about the episode.
All right. Tommy in St. Francisville. Tommy, you're on with Ray Strother. Hi, Tommy.
Good morning. Mr. Strothers, when's the last time you remember a sitting president being this far down in the polls for reelection?
You know, I don't think this has happened in a long time. You know, I'm not good with numbers. Jim Inkster is the best I've ever run into, and he can probably tell you, but I don't remember anything like this. There's one thing that bothers me, though, and it's about polling and having a lifetime, professional lifetime of dealing with polling. There is a hidden vote for Trump. There are people who are embarrassed by Trump. They're embarrassed to say they're supporting him, who will vote for him. And I don't know if it's 3% or 5%. If it's 5%, he could get reelected. But I'm firmly convinced there's an embarrassed vote out there that would not admit to a stranger on a telephone that they were going to vote for Trump. I don't blame them. I wouldn't admit it either. But I think there's more of those people than we know. So this race will tighten up, believe me.
It's analogous to the David Duke syndrome. I remember John Breaux on election night in 1990 when Duke was running against Bennett Johnston. Breaux said Johnston would get over 70% of the votes. He got 54% of the votes.
Yeah, that's analogous to it. It's the David Duke. You know, there's a lot of interest, recent interest. I've been interviewed for podcasts two or three times in the last month about this David Duke Romer race. And David Duke was underrepresented. If you ask people if they'd vote for David Duke, they would say no. Yet he got a majority of the white vote in Louisiana. So there was a lot of hidden vote there. And there's some hidden vote for Trump, too.
Barry in Mid-City. Barry, you're on with Ray Strother. Hi, Barry.
Good morning, and good morning, Mr. Strother. I'd like to ask if over the years of your very fine experience, you could comment on the role, if any, of social media in an election such as this, please.
All I can say about social media is, damn, I'm glad I got out of the business before it became a major factor. The last race I did was 2010, and we had a special department for social media. And it was alien to me. I'd have meetings about the mathematics of it, the algorithms, but I understood about half of it. My son now, who has the business and has a firm that's very active in the country, they do a lot of their work through social media, and it's very effective. So, as I said, I'm glad that I retired about when I did. It's a new world. And it's very important. Mm-hmm. Social media is very important. The president knows that.
We're about to segue to Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate, who's at the Archives Building. But before we go, one of the things we will talk with him about, and it'll be first up, is that Bill Cassidy, who got 56% of the votes 6 years ago in unseated Mary Landrieu, he is now facing the mayor of Shreveport. And this young man, Adrian Perkins, Ray, he is graduate of West Point and Harvard. He was student body president at both universities. And he's a free tour of duty veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan with a Bronze Star to show for it. He's an African-American. He obviously is a formidable candidate, but some people are saying getting in with 103 days before the election, as he's about to do, I think he's at the Archives Building as we speak to qualify, that it doesn't give him a very wide window to try to accomplish this in a state that is solidly red. Is he tilting at windmills, or is this a year in which some unusual stuff might happen, as it did in 1980 when Reagan beat Carter and the Republicans got the Senate? What do you think?
In the news break, I heard Bernie Pinsonet call him a long shot, and he is. And I respect Bernie very much, so I agree with Bernie. He's a long shot. However, he gets into a race, if he gets in 10 days before or if he gets in 100 days before, that already has a built-in 40% of the vote for him or something like that. I don't know the exact number. But I don't see Cassidy, even against a person who gets in late, I don't see how he reaches 56% again, because we're in a different time now. We have a president who is in question.
Okay, I think we're having Ray fade from us in Montana, and we have Mark on deck, but I think we got his take that Adrian Perkins has his work cut out, but that Bill Cassidy, who got 56% of the votes in 2014, may not get it this time around.